When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to Cubs PS Plus, a Northside Numbers game, a weekly podcast that dives headfirst into the analysis of hot topics driving Chicago Cubs baseball. I'm your host, Mike Waller, a lifelong Cub fan, full-time baseball stat nerd, and sometime youth baseball coach. Cubs PS Plus is now part of the Fans First Sports Network as part of Bleacher Bunch Productions, joining great shows like The Sun Ranto Show, Cup of Cubby Blue, and Baseball Rabbit Hole. This will be the first episode cross-posted, and in the coming weeks the show will transition to that group. I'll continue to have the same focus and schedule, so continue watching for this podcast weekly. In addition to the podcast feeds, you can find me on Twitter or X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at Cubs PS Plus, a spin on the baseball metric OPS Plus. Love the pod or hate it, please drop a review wherever it is you find your podcasts. If you've done that, thank you so much. Maybe you can share an episode with a friend. You can also support the Cubs PS Plus podcast through Patreon at cubspsplus.patreon.com. There are multiple support tiers, and Patreon members will always have access to ad-free episodes, plus additional perks. Welcome into episode 60, the Manny Korpis episode of this podcast. Korpis, who had earlier been a closer in Colorado, wore number 60 for the Cubs in 2012, becoming one of the first of what would be many post-Tommy John surgery signees by Theo Epstein. The Cubs have added a number of young players to the 40-man roster over the last week, and today I was joined by friend of the pod Greg Huss of Northside Bound and the Cubs on Deck podcast. We talked about the guys the Cubs added, get into a number of strategies for turning prospect depth into a winning big league club, and then we dive into the first year of his BASH metric, which equalizes offensive production across levels of the minors in a way somewhat similar to WRC+. Are you ready? Are you ready for some numbers? I'm ready. Here we go. This week I'm thrilled to be joined by Greg Huss of Northside Bound and the Cubs on Deck podcast. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Always fun coming on and chatting. I guess prospects is my thing, right? So always, yes. Always fun talking prospects.
Well, and the cool thing is right now, I think we get to have kind of a unique conversation because obviously there's the 40-man stuff going on, but the Cubs, it's winning time now, right? I mean, last couple of years, it's been a lot of like, let's build the system up.
It's a weird mix right now, right? Like where my world and Cubs, like Major League, bloggers, podcasters, stuff like that, our worlds collide a little bit where it's like, all right, like we're competing at the major league level. What can prospects do for me like right now? Whether it's prospects coming up and making an immediate impact or prospects being traded away. I know there's been plenty of the Juan Soto rumors. It's like, all right, who can the Cubs trade as far as prospects? Is it James Triantos? Is it Kevin Alcantara? Who is it that goes in a Juan Soto trade? So like this is the combining of different worlds, which is kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about some of that stuff because when you start looking at the value of players, you know, Juan Soto is a better player than Pete Crow Armstrong is right now. But what is 1 year of Juan Soto worth compared to six or more years of Pete Crow Armstrong?
Yeah, dude, that's so interesting. I always like to emphasize, and I think because I get a lot of the questions, right? Where it's like, what prospects will the Cubs trade for Soto or whoever it is? And I always preface by saying like trades confuse the heck out of me, man. Like they are so strange where it's entirely dependent on how other teams view your players, not on how the team views your players. Because like you look at years past when the Cubs were trading for prospects, right? When they were getting those really young, the Yu Darvish trade, the Anthony Rizzo trade, the Chris Bryant, when they're getting these super young guys, the teenagers back in trades, were like, at the time, it was really frustrating because not because of the players we were getting back in those trades, but because of the timeline that they were on, where it's like, these are all teenagers. They're lottery tickets in a lot of ways. And I think that now looking at it, it's like these guys have worked out. None of those were top 100 guys when the Cubs traded for them. Not a single one of them was. So to have that now and have all these top 100 guys is super impressive from the Cubs standpoint of like identifying who can eventually be those like high end prospects.
Yeah. I remember when we traded for PCA for Javi Baez, people were super excited about that from the start, but he was what, 19 and had played like 10 games before he got hurt that year.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, it's like being able to predict those trades and say like, oh, the San Diego Padres, they want Kevin Alcantara versus Owen Casey. It's like, I do not know. You know, like, how could I, like, I don't even know where to rank Kevin Alcantara versus Owen Casey, and I watch him 120 games a year. So, I don't know how they would value one guy in a trade and giving up Juan Soto for him. I don't know. That's wild.
Right. Well, let's jump in. So, we have some breaking news tonight. I think it was earlier this week or this weekend they added Luis Vasquez to the 40-man roster. And they had three spots left tonight, and there were a bunch of guys up in the air eligible for Rule 5. And they added Porter Hodge, Bailey Horn, and Michael Arias to the 40-man. So they're sitting at 40. Those three new ads, what are your thoughts there? Any surprises?
Yeah, so Brian and I went on the Cubs on Deck podcast. We released an episode this morning kind of previewing five players that seem the most likely to be added to the 40-man roster slash selected in the Rule 5 draft. And those three guys were three of the five, as well as Cole Franklin and Pablo Aliendo. So I think all three guys were on our radar. However, I was not expecting the Cubs to add three guys. I was not expecting. I could make a very reasonable case for all three of them as to why they were added, obviously, and I can get into details on why they were added. But the fact they added three was kind of shocking. Like I was expecting one player to get added. And then I was in the boat that I would have been more surprised with the Cubs adding two than zero. I thought zero was more likely than two, and they went and added three. So I like all three players quite a bit, and I think that I think they were all added for very specific reasons. And kind of running through those, starting with Porter Hodge is who you mentioned first. I think that he was added just because he has some nasty stuff. An article came out at Baseball America, I think last week, talking specifically about that stuff that he has. Just super, super unique. You know, the Cubs love pitchers that are really unique. He's got a fastball. Well, it's a cutter fastball. Porter Hodge throws it as a fastball. But
you know it's weird when
like
you can't name it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And Porter Hodge says he throws a fastball. If you look at all the numbers behind it, he throws a cutter. It's a fastball in the mid-90s that moves like it has that cut ride action, like what the Justin Steele effect, but it's coming in at 95 miles an hour, 96 miles an hour. And he's got a slider that is one of has some of the most horizontal break of a slider in the entire system. And so that's why he was added, was the crazy stuff. Michael Arias, on the other hand, he was added because he also has some pretty good stuff. The fastball touches triple digits. He comes at a low angle where it makes it really, really difficult on hitters to pick up on that fastball and get on top of that. And the changeup is really solid from Michael Arias. The slider is still a little ways off. He throws some good ones every once in a while, but it's really the fastball changeup. He was added because of the higher upside. Like, he's the high upside play. And then the third guy, in adding Bailey Horn, I viewed that addition kind of as a need in the organization. Obviously, he's very good at pitching. He's a lefty with a really good sweeper, with some good fastball, cut right action on the fastball as well. But he was added because there's not a whole lot of lefty relievers in this organization right now at the major league level or below. And so it's kind of like you want to make sure you hold on to those guys that you need that position. So all three different reasons why I think they were added, but all three legitimately good reasons why they're now part of the 40-man roster.
Yeah, and Bailey Horn, I mean, to the earlier point about trades, like Cubs got him for Ryan Tepera from the White Sox.
Yeah, exactly.
Two and a half years ago.
Yeah, which is wild to think about.
It's crazy. So I remember last year I had you on around this time and we talked about the Rule 5 stuff, and there were even more guys last year at risk. And one of the things you brought up is that because of COVID, there wasn't a Rule 5 draft the year before. So everything was kind of double loaded. There really weren't that many guys picked last year. And now just a refresher, for people who aren't familiar with the Rule 5, but the Rule 5, was a threshold. It's 4 years in the system or five past...
It's yeah. Once you if you're signed at 18, age 18 or younger, it's 5, and if you're signed at 19 or older, it's 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, make sure that you won't get stuck in the system.
Yeah, the whole idea of it is so that like if you are a good player, but you are in a really good or really deep organization, that you don't just get stuck in the minor leagues. It gives you a chance to latch on with another team. If a team selects you, you have to stay at the major league level for the full year. Once you're on the major league team for the full year, you get to stay in the organization. But a lot of times, it cracks me up. I think that like with this happening in mid-November, it's kind of the first taste of like baseball maneuvering, because we don't see signings at this point. Like, we don't see free agent signings or trades at this point. So it's kind of like the World Series is over. This is the first like movement that is happening. Mm-hmm. But really, like it's big for the players, obviously. Like I love to see these guys getting added to the 40-man roster. But like the Rule 5 draft specifically is not very action-packed. No. And the guys that are selected, you'll see a lot of guys that are drafted get returned back to their original team even before the season starts up. So it's just really interesting. What happened today, adding guys to the 40-man roster, is those are some big moves.
Yes.
The actual Rule 5 draft, when it comes around in December, based on those guys like Cole Franklin and Pablo Allendeo that are not added, they're eligible for the Rule 5 draft. Are they selected? Maybe there's a chance. The Cubs have lost some guys in years past. They lost Chris Clark in the Rule 5 draft last year, but again, he was returned back to the organization this year. So it's funny because I think this is what we have to talk about. It's good. But it cracks me up how small of an impact the actual Rule 5 draft has.
Yes.
But I think it's
for
because
the attention it gets.
I think it's important because these players are good enough to be added to the 40-man roster. If they did not add Bailey Horn or any of these guys to the 40-man roster, they would be selected in the Rule 5 draft. I mean, there's a good chance they would, right? So have to be protected.
And the kicker is the team that picks them has to keep them on their active roster for the full year.
Which is difficult to do.
Right, but like a Bailey Horn or Michael Arias, you go to a bad baseball team, they could stash those guys in the bullpen and be fine right now. I was trying to think back. I think the last one I can really remember the Cubs taking and sticking was Hector Rondon.
Yeah. Hector Rondon was the last one where that actually happened. I know they drafted in years following that, I think Gray Fenter was a guy they drafted from the Orioles, returned him.
Okay.
They drafted actually, Brian mentioned it too on our show. They drafted Caleb Smith, who actually turned out to be a pretty damn good reliever for the Marlins, or for a pitcher for the Marlins.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then he pitched for a couple other teams, but I think he was an all-star with the Marlins, and the Cubs drafted him, but then weren't, I believe it was the 2017, they drafted him for the 2017 season. The roster was too loaded to keep that version of Caleb Smith on the roster, so he was returned back to the Marlins, and ended up being pretty good. We joked on the podcast, it was like, that was Theo Epstein's way of like bragging. It was like, hey, I drafted this guy, I know he's going to be good, but I can't keep him on my roster, so yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, so as we step through the off season, so the first moves are clearing out the 60 day IL, and you've got these now. And I know Jed typically likes to sit 37, 38, 39, just so he has a spot in his pocket to go grab someone like Julian Merriweather off waivers. What do you see cut-wise? I mean, because they're at 40 now. Certainly as they sign guys, they'll have to make cuts. Like, who do you think is at risk?
Yeah, I think so on Friday there's some non-tender candidates. That's how they're going to limit that. So it's at 40 now. It won't be at 40 come Friday night. I think Patrick Wisdom's a pretty good non-tender candidate given the amount of money that he's owed in arbitration this year. So I think Wisdom's a good candidate. Miles Mastroboni's an okay candidate for non-tender. I don't know. I think that they probably decide to keep him around. I think he has value in playing multiple positions. He performed really well in AAA this year. I think that he's probably someone to keep around. Michael Rucker is probably on that short list of non-tender candidates. He's just been kind of lying there on the as a non-tender or DFA candidate for the past like few years, but like the I think the club really likes what they've seen from him, and he's shown flashes of being pretty damn good.
Yeah, he's given him just enough. Like
exactly, just
I was
enough,
lower on him than you last year, but then he started pitching well for a while.
Yeah, yeah. So he's done just enough. And then you got the guys who, that have been injured, where it gets really interesting, right? So Ethan Roberts, love Ethan Roberts to death, but I think that he's probably on that list. Cody Hoyer, who has dealt with plenty of injury problems since he was acquired in the White Sox. I think those type of guys are probably non-tender candidates just because they haven't been on the field. It has nothing to do with their performance. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ethan Roberts was great during his time in the minors. He earned that 40-man roster spot going into the season before. And so I think it's one of those things where that just the lack of them being on the field probably hurts them, obviously. So I think there's a few candidates there that can clean up some openings on the roster, and then Jed can go out and get his Julian Merriweather of this year.
And let's go back to Miles Mastroboni and talk about Luis Vasquez. So Luis Vasquez, great glove. I've heard pretty elite defense from the clips I've seen. I totally believe it. Hitting maybe isn't there, but what we saw from Mastroboni this year is the versatility. Like, he probably was unfairly treated early, having to be the right fielder when Saya was out, but he could play third base, second, he could fill in at short. He can play some corner outfield. And we saw with him, he was able to hit high fastballs. And I think the Cubs got him last year right before the Rule 5 cuts. I think basically Tampa was going to have to cut him. Mm-hmm. And so the Cubs and Rays worked out a swap.
Yeah, that was literally the Cubs sent over. Oh, it was a reliever.
It was a relief pitcher. I'm blanking.
It was not Gregory Montaño. It was Alfredo Zuraga. Was the guy they traded away. 100% as a they had too many guys on their 40-man roster. They needed to add some guys to protect from the Rule 5 draft. Miles Mastroboni was that guy. That was a situation where that was exactly a year ago today that happened. So, I think he becomes interesting. He's still got major league or minor league options. Mm-hmm. He performed pretty well in AAA, right? Like he had 165 plate appearances in AAA and posted a 448 OBP. That'll play. Yeah. that's tremendous, right? He was very very good during his time in AAA, and he ran that shuttle between Iowa and Chicago quite a bit, and like you said, he was forced. I think that he got a bad rep just because that error that he had in right field early on in the season.
Yes.
Like, ah, crap. Like, now that's what he's kind of known for early on here. But I think Miles Mastroboni has value for sure. It's interesting though, like you mentioned with Luis Vasquez, like him being a part of the 40-man roster now. Luis Vasquez is just he's defense is his thing, and defense has always been his thing. He's been a tremendous defender at shortstop, and obviously that will play elsewhere. Like if you're that good defensively at shortstop, you can go play some third base, you can play some second base. I trust him pretty much anywhere. But with him being that good of a shortstop, we've just been waiting on for years. He's been in the organization for a long time, and so we were just waiting on the bat to do anything. Like, he just needed to do something with the bat to warrant like continuing to getting called up, added to the 40-man roster, stuff like that. And he did. He hit this past year. He ended up putting up 20 home runs this season. He had an OPS over the course of AA and AAA at .819. He was a really good performer. He was a really decent performer, I guess, offensively. And that's all he needs to be. He doesn't even need to be an average hitter in order to bring value to a team. If he's he can be a below average hitter and still bring value. Not significantly below average because you still need to hit something, but he can be at the major league level in not full playing time. I think that Luis Vasquez can put up like a 650 OPS and still bring value because he's so good defensively.
Yeah, he's pretty quick too, isn't he?
He's quick laterally. He's not going to go out there and steal you a ton of bases. I think
so he's not as fast as Mastroboni.
No, and really not as good of a base runner either. So Vasquez had 10 stolen bases this year, but also was caught stealing 10 times. Okay. Mastroboni, I'd take him on the base running department over Vasquez.
So it's been interesting over the last few years as the Cubs have made those trades at the deadline and been building up the system. It's been about, I'm never one to believe that you have too many shortstops or too many third basemen or whatever. Like, that stuff will work itself out. But there also hasn't been that much concern about a lot of the talent was at high A, double A. Now it's more double A, triple A, knocking on the door of the bigs. And the Cubs are in a position where they missed the playoffs by 2 games, just went out and spent a record money on a manager, poaching one from their rival. That was a little shocking. And so they're pretty clearly, I think, in win now or win very soon kind of mode. Maybe not fully all in this year like 2016, but pretty much knocking on that door. How do you look at it in terms of, you know, they've got Ian Happ locked up for 3 more seasons. Saez locked up for 3 more years. They got Dansby for 6, Nico for 3 more. There are now fewer and fewer spots where some of these kids can come up. Obviously holes at first base, third base, center field, maybe center field is PCA. But as you look at some of the free agent moves, I'm never one that says like, don't go sign Shohei Ohtani because we have Alexander Canario. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think there is a line where maybe the Cubs don't want to line up a guy, lock up a guy for 5 years to block third base, where maybe they have 3 or 4 guys that are going to be knocking on the door in the next 2 years.
Yeah, I get that. I agree that you got to be careful with who you're signing and how you're like. Don't go out and sign Trey Mancini and Eric Hosmer to block Matt Mervis and his development path.
That'd be really stupid.
But,
who would do that?
But yeah, can you imagine a team doing that? I think that more times than not, if you are signing a player for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, like the multi-year contracts, more than 3, I guess, like more than 3 year contracts, there's a major reason why you're doing that. It's because they're a really, really good player. Like, average to a little bit above average players aren't getting 4+ year contracts. And so, like, if you're signing a player that's 4+ years, sign them. Don't worry about who your prospects are, in my opinion. Like, even like look back at like the Jason Hayward contract, right? And we could revisit that. We could have a full podcast episode about that contract. But like, Jason Hayward was a really good player. He got that long contract and that big contract because he was still very young and had performed very well, both defensively and showed promise offensively to get that contract. So like, if you're signing guys because you think they're really good players, go out and get like, because you're hoping that these prospects become a guy that can eventually one day go out there and get a 4, 5, 6, 7 year contract. You know, like the Alcantaras, the Owen Caseys, those guys. Like, hopefully one day they can sign those type of contracts. And so, I don't want those. I don't want the 1 and 2 year contracts to prohibit a player from their development path. That's what I'm more worried about.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and it just gets to the point where, I mean, we already know. But in the system, they've got PCA, they've got Canario, Alcantara, Casey, like a ton of outfielders that are never going to be the starting outfield in Chicago. So you're going to be phasing some guys in. And maybe like Alcantara's timeline is maybe kind of as Happ and Say are rolling out of their contracts. So maybe that's different. But I think ideally, the way I look at the organization, I look at like the Rays and the Dodgers.
Yep.
I like the Dodgers model better because they actually spend some money. But like being able to kind of roll guys kind of continuously. Yeah. And I think one of the things that got the Cubs last time is all those kids came up together and they had Lester signed and Hayward signed. And so many of those guys kind of stretched out over the exact same window. So as they all were hitting ARB together, they got way expensive. They were all going to hit free agency around the same time. And I know Jed's talked about that a little bit, but that's something I'll be looking for this offseason to see if they can stagger those lines a little bit.
I mean, now you're speaking my language, Mike. I mean, that's what I've been preaching for the past several years. Is like this rebuild, whether it's called a rebuild or not, this rebuild is just different than the other ones. I know that some of these guys are arriving right around the same time, right? You got PCA arriving at the same time as Canario. You got Owen Caseys and Kevin Alcantara who were finishing the year in AA last year. But there's a big difference between like right, like you look at Owen Caseys and or let's look at Kevin Alcantara for example, right? He is on the 40-man roster, but he ended the year in AA Tennessee last year. He spent almost the entire year in High A South Bend. So say this year he spends the majority of the year in AA Tennessee and then next year the majority of the year in AAA Iowa. I mean, like, you're obviously hoping for a much quicker timeline because sure. because he's already on the 40-man roster. I've said this so many times. If you're a prospect already on the 40-man roster, once you reach AA, you're a call away. So yeah. that's – take what I'm saying here with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Sure.
But, like,
yeah.
say he's not, like, ready to be a starting major league outfielder until 2026, opening day 2026 rolls around. At that yeah. point, he's still 24 years old, 25 mm-hmm. years old, still super young. But, like, that's a much different timeline than, like, PCA, who is ready opening day next year, potentially. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
I think that they still have different general timelines. Matt Shaw is another example. Like, obviously, he ended the year in Double A Tennessee as well, but he was just drafted last year. So, like, what is his actual timeline? Like, will we see him next year in Chicago? Potentially. But will he be ready to be a everyday contributor by the end of the year next year? Probably not. So, I don't know. I still really like, although the guys are reaching the upper levels of the minors, I think that's actually a really good thing. And I think it's a good thing because you have a situation where they are all progressing and getting past the lower levels and still these top prospects. They're mm-hmm. not fizzling out. You got a guy like Brennan Davis who has fizzled out, obviously. But a majority of these guys that we considered, oh, like, they're up-and-comers, they're up-and-comers, mm-hmm. they're staying up-and-comers, or they're getting to that level that we hoped they would be at, as opposed to kind of like, man, we hoped, but maybe now we're just hoping for him to be a regular, let alone like a star. So right. I don't know. I'm still really liking what I'm seeing with the way that the system is progressing in terms of timelines for these players.
Yeah, and one of the things, like, Matt Shaw is a good example. He came out and, I mean, he just tore it up after he got drafted.
Yeah,
and so it'd be interesting to see, go through an off season and see what it looks like starting the season and whether he carries that through, or to some extent his sample size was almost small enough that it was almost like a hot stretch, but it was a superheated hot stretch.
Yeah, it was a unique hot stretch because it was his first, his hot stretch was his first stretch in the Cubs yeah. system, right? He got 159 total plate appearances. That's enough to be, you look at 159 plate appearances, that's enough to be not just a quick short hot right. stretch.
Yep.
That's like, there's something there. Now, is he going to continue to hit 350? Over the
so.
Course of his career? Yeah, of course he is. No, I'm kidding. It's like, that's not sustainable. But, like, if he can be, like, he had a 136 bash for me. And I know we'll get into that. But he had a 136 bash for me last year, which was, in that many plate appearances, in the 159 plate appearances, the highest bash in the organization. He was really strong and really impressive. I'm hoping he's even part of that starting next year.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's been so much focus the last few years on the outfielders, but I like seeing, seeing Vasquez and seeing now Shaw and
yeah.
Jefferson Rojas exploding and Triantos having a big year. Like, there's some infield coming too.
And I'll tell you what, like, I think that that's why this offseason I am much more down with the idea of getting I know we need corner infield help. We need first yep. base, third base. I'm much more down with the idea of getting some sort of first base slash DH type guy, right? It can mm-hmm. be Cody Bellinger, it can be Pete Alonso, it can be Juan Soto. I don't want to force the issue at third base. Like, I don't think, like, Matt Chapman to me is not the answer.
Matt Chapman was basically the question I asked you earlier.
Yeah.
I just
yeah.
didn't say it out loud.
Yeah, and I just think that Matt Chapman's not the answer. I think that what you can do is, yeah, you can't not do anything at third base and not do anything at first base.
Correct.
but, like, do something at first base, because at third base, I think you can hold over. And I don't know if I tweeted this out or put it on our 1060 West Discord, where I put it, but I put it in text somewhere, that I think you can really be fine if you're the Cubs starting off next year with some combination of Patrick Wisdom, if he doesn't get non-tender, of Patrick Wisdom, Nick Madrigal, Christopher Morel, something there at third base, just kind of a mm-hmm. mismatch of guys, right? Ideally, you'd love Chris Morel just to be the starting third baseman. That's, again, another full-blown episode worth of conversation. But something there, just long enough to maybe hold you over until you get BJ Murray up in Chicago, that can maybe hold you over until you get Matt Shaw up in Chicago. I think that, like, there's enough, like, good things going on in the system at third base And then maybe it's like maybe James Triantos is your guy at third base and Matt Shaw. Mm-hmm. Like it's there's enough going on there that I would rather kind of like patchwork that. And I think that especially Craig Counsell, I think that actually David Ross did a pretty damn good job of like making that work at third base this past year. And I think Craig Counsell could absolutely do a good job where you just kind of make it work. It just can't be a negative position, but I think it can be an average position there, at least holding you over to like I said, Matt Shaw, James Triantos, BJ Murray. However you want to toss that and get better. But I think you can get better throughout the year.
Yeah, and it'd be different if we were looking at free agency and all of a sudden, like, Manny Machado or Arenado were available out there. Then, sure, go get the big star.
Exactly. When Matt Chapman is your star third baseman of the offseason, it's like, yes.
I mean, if you could get him on a three-year deal, maybe that's okay. Yeah. But, like, I don't like him at 5 or 6 years.
No. I just don't think – I don't see a scenario where he accepts anything less than 4 years. So
yeah, especially with this market. And it's interesting with this market, too, and given the positions the Cubs have. Obviously, Shohei Ohtani is the big fish. He's the one everybody wants. And I think a lot of the market's going to depend on him anyway. But, like, if you're the Cubs and you're seriously trying to play in that space, obviously, if they get him, he's the DH for the next 6 years. Mm-hmm. If you don't get him – now DH is kind of in play. Like, do you go get, maybe you trade for Pete Alonso. Maybe you can also sign Rhys Hoskins. Maybe you can trade for Juan Soto and maybe also get Rhys Hoskins or whatever. Like, you're probably only making one big trade, but now there are more options that open up.
I would, real quick, I would love, I mean, if I had my pick right now, like right, what might make the most sense, I'm all in for whatever the trade for Juan Soto and then signing Rhys Hoskins. That'd be my 1-2 punch with the hitters.
Yeah. Short of Ohtani, that's pretty much where I sit too.
Exactly. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to keep trying to speak it into existence there.
I think I'd rather be just like put it off to the side and like be super surprised and just like, this is the greatest day of my life. Like,
yes, exactly. I guess so when we start looking at the trades, I mean, I think obviously we sort of hit it earlier. Like, I don't know, from everything I've seen the last few years, reading a bunch of different people's opinions, teams just aren't trading like top 10 in baseball prospects at this point, unless maybe like when the Padres traded for Soto, but they were getting 2.5 years of Soto as opposed to 1 year.
So
like who in the system do you think might be in a trade for a big star, whoever that star is? Like, do you think we're up to the level of like the potentially Alcantara, Casey kind of at the top level?
Yeah, that's tough. So I think that go down the list, right? So like I'm getting ready to update my prospect list over at Northside Bound. I think we're publishing those updates in probably early December or so. It's coming up sometime soon. I've already pretty much locked in. I got my top 50 locked in.
Just 50? Come on.
Yeah, we'll see how many I can get written up. So if you kind of go, so you guys here are getting a little sneak peek at the top of my list here. But if you go down the list, right, PCA and Cade Horton, they won't get traded.
No.
I hate the word untouchable because I think that's a dumb phrase to use. Every player can be traded for something. But it just like if I just don't see a scenario where a trade falls into place where PCA or Cade Horton get included in that. So then I got Kevin Alcantara and Owen Casey at 3 and 4. I think that that they headline a Juan Soto type deal. I don't even know if they get included in a Pete Alonso type of deal. I know that it's different, right? Because Pete Alonso does have some. Or what? Does he have two? Or is it this? He's not a rental, right? He has 2 years.
No, it's after, 1 year for.
Is it Alonso 1 year? Okay. Yeah. Then I don't even think he gets included in a Pete Alonso. I think like Kevin Alcantara, Kate, and Owen Casey. Those are the headliner of a Juan Soto. And then after that, I think it's like if you're including those guys, it's probably guys outside of like the top 20. After that, right. You know what I mean. And then after that, then I think you start getting into some guys that I could absolutely, like, I think these, like the Jefferson Rojas, Matt Shaw, Jordan Wicks, Jackson Ferris, like I think those guys are more likely to be included in those type of deals for Juan Soto or for Pete Alonso or for take your pick at whatever scenario gets kind of thrown out there in trades. But I think that's kind of your sweet spot. Jefferson Rojas feels weird because I'm guessing that he has much more value internally. Like, I'm guessing the Cubs are way higher on Jefferson Rojas than another team is. So, like, he probably gets thrown out, but for a completely different reason. I think, like, and then again, Matt Shaw with being, like, he's new to the organization. I think your sweet spot is, I have, like, a tier three, and that starts at the seventh-ranked prospect, which I have is Jordan Wicks, right? So I think Jordan Wicks, Jackson Ferris, Ben Brown, James Triantos, Moises Ballesteros, Canario. Like, I think that's your sweet spot of guys that, like, to look at first to be included in trades. Now, it may be that an organization wants a Christopher Morel or a Hayden Wesneski or something like that that's already been at the major league level, then that kind of changes things, obviously. But
yeah, for sure.
That kind of 7 through 11, that 7 through 12 probably, is prospects that I would kind of look at first as most likely to be included.
Yeah, and, you know, Morel's such an interesting case. Like, he's such a good athlete, and as much as I think David Ross did a good job of having third base be, you know, passable last year, I just don't get any real feel for, like, they sort of don't say he's never going to be a third baseman, but they never put him there.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, so their kind of actions as far as Christopher Morel goes is that type of usage is what I really look at in prospect rankings, where like, I think that a lot of people were really high on, like, oh, Jonathan Perlaza should be a lot higher on prospect rankings than a lot of people give him credit for. And I love Jonathan Perlaza. He's he's now a minor league free agent. He'll sign somewhere else for sure, because he might even get a major league deal somewhere, potentially. But I didn't include Jonathan Perlaza up in, like, the top 30 of my prospect rankings, top 20, whatever, because if the Cubs thought he was that good, he would be up. I know that there was outfield depth that he had to kind of sort through, but it's like, man, if the Cubs don't believe in him that way, should I have him as a top 30 prospect? You know,
like, it saw the same thing with Velasquez too.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, I see the skills there, obviously. Like, with Velasquez, he hits the ball hard as hell. Like, he's really good, but it's like, there's a cap to how high I can get him just because, like, what the Cubs are telling me with their actions. You know what I mean? So, like, like, Luis Vasquez has now moved up my prospect rankings because they added him to the 40-man roster. That means quite a bit to me in my rankings, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want to save some time for Bash, but I do want to get into one more guy here. And maybe this ties in with Craig Breslow leaving. I mean, the Cubs pitching infrastructure, regardless of what Council does at the major league level, they have done a really good job, I think, of putting in a consistent message across the org. Like, they work guys in the same way. But let's take, like, Cade Horton. So I know there's a lot of buzz about, you know, is he going to be up next year? I think there's certainly a shot he can be. But if you look at his workload, like, he didn't pitch in college until his last year, and he threw 53 innings, if I'm remembering right. And then this year he threw 88 in the minors.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to be 160 inning starter next year, but I'm guessing they probably want to push him to, like, 120, 130.
Yeah, that feels about right. Typically, you're not going much more than 40 innings over what you did the previous year.
Okay.
So with him throwing 80, what was it? I don't know.
I think it was
80-ish, 83, 88, something like that. Does that include it? Do you know if that included his postseason start?
I think it did, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, so, like, regardless, if he's less than 90, he's not gonna be much over 130 next year. That just doesn't really happen. And so, yeah, how he gets used next year is one of the more interesting storylines entering the 2024 season. I honestly don't know. I don't know how he'll get used. I've seen Greg Zumach has thrown out the idea maybe he just gets a late start and he starts the minor league season in May, right? Where he starts in Arizona, he's doing his work down in Arizona in extended spring training, comes up in May, then he can start to get a full workload in so he can end in Chicago in a playoff run. I've seen that. My other co-host Brian Smith has kind of suggested, like, just going in, like, 3-inning spurts to start off his minor league season. But starting at the normal, like, late March, early April timeline, I think that makes sense. I think I would probably lean towards
that. It kind of stretches
method.
He goes, right?
Yeah, so, like, you start off in, like, two innings and 3 innings, then 3 innings for a while for, like, several starts. Then he gets bumped up to 4 innings. And so, like, he just slowly gets there. That feels more natural than the May start, but I get both sides of things. Because if he's starting in May, then, like, he's just after. Like, he can go 5 innings as soon as he starts pitching in May. I don't know, man. Like I think that the scenario that probably won't happen is that he starts off the season. Now, guys don't really start off the season throwing 5 innings, 6 innings, 7 right. innings anyways. Like, that doesn't really happen in the minor leagues. But, like, I just don't see a scenario where he starts off by going 4 and then in April, in early April. That's not – I don't it's weird. I don't know. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, and I don't want to necessarily compare them as prospects because Strasburg was, like, the big star. But I remember when Strasburg was up as a rookie, the Nationals were in contention. And it's like, mm-hmm. what are they going to do? Like, he's their ace or was up there as one of their aces. And I remember them shutting him down in September of a playoff race. And that's probably like a scenario the Cubs definitely don't want to wander into.
I think the situation more recently to compare Cade Horton next year to is what the Marlins did with Yuri Perez this year.
Okay.
I think that they shut him down. They sent him down to AAA. Like, there was some weirdness along with it. I think that I have to go back and look and see exactly what they did, but I think that's probably your blueprint for Cade Horton next year is Yuri Perez. Similar,
they kind of got some pause in there, right? It's basically what they did.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think and those are both similar guys. I think that entering last year, Yuri Perez was a top 30 prospect in all of baseball. Cade Horton is going to enter next year as a top 20 prospect in all of baseball. Like, yeah, I think that's probably the blueprint. I'm sure there's some conversations cross organization, right? To say, hey, is that something that worked for you guys for the Marlins? Do you think that was best for the health of it? Because obviously they're not giving away clues sure. on how to best compete for the playoffs. But like these players are like it's a health standpoint, especially with Cade Horton.
Yeah. Well, and I'm like, I know there's a lot of talk about babying the pitchers today compared to past years, but like Cade Horton has real actual injuries he's come back from. So you really do have to take that seriously.
I think that I would not be surprised one single bit if Cade Horton made 4 starts next year in the minor leagues and got called up to the bigs. I don't expect that, but I wouldn't be surprised in any way. I think he is at this point, you see across the league, teams aren't wasting bullets in the minor leagues for pitchers. If the guy has the stuff, which he does, if he won't look completely overmatched, which he wouldn't, get him up to the big leagues, man. Like let's see him work. why waste those bullets in double A or triple A? Let's help the big league club win.
Yeah, and good pitching is a nice problem to have.
Exactly.
So let's transition to Bash. So when I had you on first time last year, you were just rolling out Bash. And you had done the numbers. So it's been a year now. Like, how did it work out for you?
Yeah, it was good. So little background. You're right. This is the first year of Bash. And it is the offensive metric that I kind of whipped up. I'd been working on it for a while, but I debuted it last season, or the end of last season. And it takes into account multiple things, right? So it's offensive, mostly around hitting. It does incorporate stolen bases and caught stealing as well, because I thought that was kind of important. But it is basically, you can compare it a lot to WRC+, where 100 is league average, and then a guy bashing 130 is 30% better than league average. It takes into account the ballpark factors.
For Bash, it's system average, right?
It is the system average, it also takes into account league averages. So it is the league that they're playing at, like the Myrtle Beach Pelicans is up against the Carolina League. So it is league adjusted, it is ballpark adjusted, and then it is also age adjusted. So a guy like David Bode playing in AAA last year at 30 years old obviously got dinged quite a bit because he is much older than the average player at AAA. In the same breath, a guy like Christian Hernandez, who on paper didn't perform very well, if you just look at his slash line and his overall season numbers, you'd say that was probably not a very successful season for Christian Hernandez. And I'd argue that it still was not a very successful season for him. But Christian Hernandez had everything going his way when it comes to Bash, right? He was younger than the average age at his league. He was playing at a ballpark. Well, he was playing at a league that's really hard to hit in a ballpark that's even more difficult than the rest of the league to hit in. He really had a lot of things going his way, and he was a plus base runner, which helped him out a little bit too. So, it's something that WRC plus does not take into account ballpark factors. And so that was kind of that was one of the reasons why I wanted to generate this. And then the other reason why I wanted to was because post COVID, the leagues got really weird in terms of the ages of players there, right? We lost the short season league where the mm-hmm. Cubs used to have Eugene. And so guys were much younger playing at single A in Myrtle Beach. And then it just kind of trickled throughout the organization where it's like, I just don't know how old this guy is and how he should be performing at this level. And so I wanted to incorporate that. And as far as I'm aware, I don't know of any other stats out there that incorporate age into their offensive values. So the last thing I wanted to point out with Bash is that it's not quite as extreme as what WRC Plus is, right? I use run values in the same way that WRC Plus uses run values. But mm-hmm. with Bash, you won't really see a guy bashing 160. That's not really a thing. If a guy posts a WRC plus and has a really good year of 160, it's he was really good. That doesn't for Bash, anything above 130 is considered elite. That's really, really good year of a guy being above 130 or above. So for example, I believe that PCA Latin in 2022, he was the best in the organization. He was right. I think it was 131, 130. He was
sounds
right
about
around
right.
there.
Yeah.
This year, I was really pleased with how it kind of turned out. I was excited to see as the season was going on how it would be affected, and I was constantly having to tweak throughout the season as a guy would get called up, right? If he was younger than average for his time in South Bend, and then he got called up to Tennessee where he was league average, how did that then impact the Bash scores? And that was really fun to follow throughout the year. I had a really fun time following that. So I'm glad that I kind of have a final product of the season. And as we kind of continue, my goal at some point when I get any sort of free time, I don't know when that'll ever be, but is to go back and have have documented Bash from previous seasons, mm-hmm. Starting in 2021 and working our way back. I've done that for when I first started working on this.
Yeah, you talked through some of that last year.
Yeah, I did that. I went through and to make sure that I wasn't crazy in what the stat I was whipping up, but I didn't record those and keep those all safe. So I need to go do that. But so really the leader in the system, over the course of a full season's worth of action. Now I don't include any rookie ball. This is from Myrtle Beach up.
Yeah.
And so. It depends on the threshold of plate appearances. If you're looking at 300 as your minimum of plate appearances, then Jefferson Rojas was the leader. He had a 134 Bash. If you're looking for a true full season, Owen Casey was your leader at 131 this year, which makes sense.
Yep.
I think that those are the two guys generating the most buzz in the system as far as hitters go this year. So I'm glad that my goal is to make sure that this stat, for the most part, lines up with the eye test. With what I'm seeing, I want to make sure that it makes sense. It's not crazy. Every once in a while, I want to see some guys that surprise me, obviously.
Right.
But if something's way off, I'm like, oh, something's wrong with the stat. But I didn't get really any of that this year, which is good.
That's how I used it for the year. So I'm a regular listener to your podcast and I follow the stuff on Northside Bound. So it's cool to hear the guys you're talking about, then go check out where the Bash scores were. And for the most part, they're pretty much there. One thing I was looking at this afternoon is I went and sorted, instead of by Bash, I sorted by age.
Okay. Yeah.
And if we look at the plate appearance threshold of, 300 plus, or actually 200 plus, we've got five guys in there bashing over 100 that can't even buy a beer yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun.
And I think that's probably a pretty key part of this is that you do see some advantages in Myrtle Beach and those offensive performances from those guys, from those younger guys, they'll stand out, the Jefferson Rojas and Pedro Ramirez and Christian Hernandez. Those guys are going to stand out a little bit more because they have a lot of those factors going their way. And I think that the way it should be used is that how much stock should I put into a guy in terms of prospect rankings? And I think that appeals really well to Bash. We're David Bode or Miles Mastroboni is a really good example, right? Where he did, I just talked about earlier on the show, he did have a really good, a really solid season during his time in AAA. But because he's an older guy, it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, I can appreciate that he performed well. I can look at the stat line and say he did perform really well, but I'm not going to rank him on prospect. I'm not going to say, like, I'm not going to set my expectations that he's going to be a stud in Chicago because that bash score is still a little bit low and it accounts for that age. So, like with Jefferson Rojas, like the hype on Jefferson Rojas should be about as high as it can get right now, just because he did 18. What he did at 18 years old in Myrtle Beach, right? So, like, it's just like that's really fun. There's a reason why Owen Casey at 20 years old, who did what he did, is leading and put up damn good numbers too, is doing what he did in terms of bash.
Well, and also if you just sort it by bash, and some of these are smaller sample sizes, so they're a little bit higher, but I mean, just looking at some of the guys that just got drafted, Brian Kelmer and Jonathan Long and obviously Shaw. I mean, you know, it's just good to see those guys getting out quick, even though I don't think we know what that means yet.
Yeah. And honestly, it's that's the thing with bash too, is like, obviously only like small sample size alert, just like you would for any other stat, like be careful about that. But it's fun to see, like, it's fun to say, like, oh, like Brian Kelmer bashed 150 in 138 plate appearances. Like, that's wild. That's not normal to do that. But it's one of those things too with Kelmer, right? With Kelmer and Jonathan Long, who did 139. He was second in the organization, kind of taking off the minimums. But both those guys, they did it, and they were older. Especially Kelmer was older for their age at Myrtle Beach. Like, Kelmer is 23 years old, performing at Myrtle Beach. He did not get any boost from being younger, because he was significantly older than the average age for that level. So he just did it because he just put up a 1.107 OPS. Like, he just went out there and got after it. 161 OPS plus. Like, that's crazy. So you can kind of improve that score in a variety of different ways. I don't want to put too much emphasis on the fact that it's just like age compared to level, you know?
Sure. No, but that's certainly part of it. Yeah. So when you were looking through this over the course of the year, you said there were no big surprises. Were there some guys that kind of made you do a double take here and there?
Yeah, I think the way that Pedro Ramirez's bash continued to rise and rise and rise and rise. His situation was really interesting because, like, he started off the year and he really, really struggled during his time early on in the year in Myrtle Beach. He got sent down to Arizona for, I think it was 2 weeks, a little bit less maybe. And when he returned, he just started to take off. And he just, that bash rose pretty quickly up to the point where, like, he had a 128 bash this year. He finished just behind Moises Ballesteros and Owen Casey. So that's really, really impressive from Pedro Ramirez. And so, like, that was really interesting because I think a lot of times you get, like, these preconceived notions about, like, what a player is just based on that first month's performance, right? Yeah. I think it, when you go in the opposite direction, like, BJ Murray, great season all the way across the board from start to finish. Like, he had a really good year. He put up a 112 bash this year and just had a really good slash line, did it in double A, was really, really impressive. But the first month of the year, he had a 130. Like, he was hovering right around 130 for his bash. And so I think that my thought with BJ Murray was, like, this is the greatest season ever. And then he kind of came back down to earth a little bit, right? The opposite of Pedro Ramirez. So I think those guys stand out probably the most here. Both how the season wore on and then also just, like, kind of looking back at it now. I think one other guy that I wanted to kind of, it's weird because I've talked about the guys that were way high. Cole Roeder he finished with a exactly average. He finished with a 100 bash and he hovered right around 100 almost the entire year long. It was pretty funny. Like, he was just,
that's kind of wild.
He's a wildly average performer offensively the entire year. And it's like, really, like, that in the weirdest way, like, that was exactly what I wanted to see from him this year, because he had been hurt, he had been inconsistent, and this year he was wildly consistent. Like, obviously, I'd like to see him consistently above average,
sure,
but the fact that he did what he did for the entire year long, and you look across the board, like, all of his numbers, like, not just the cumulative bash was average, like, everything, like, the 249 batting average, the 760 OPS, the 12% walk rate is a little bit above average, obviously, but, like, he just got it done over the course of the entire season long, and I love that, and I love that he got consistent at bats too throughout the year. So, like, that's the building block for him. It's like, now he can go into next year in AAA Iowa and hopefully get more consistent at bats and continue to just slightly improve on what he's been doing.
Yeah. And that's where, I mean, to your point earlier, once you hit double A, you're on the 40 man, even really once you're in double A, there's a shot. Like if all of a sudden they need a backup infielder to just be there and take a pinch hit at bat, you know, like maybe a Strumpf or somebody gets added.
Mm-hmm. And actually one more, if I'm going on the line here and I'm looking at the guys that were positive, the guy that's average, one guy that kind of stood out in terms of he was a really poor performer offensively. Ethan Hearn was rough. Like he was absolutely brutal this year in South Bend. And I'm not one of like, if you listen to Cubs on Deck, like I'm never like going in on guys for being poor performers. It's not like, that's not my vibe, but I think it's important to call out in Bash because last year Bash really liked him. Relative to the overall numbers he put up, right? Like he wasn't a top performer in Bash in the organization, but compared to the numbers that he put up overall, like he was better than what we gave him credit for. Mm-hmm. And this year, like in high A in South Bend, like, I mean, the numbers, like the slash line was awful. Oh, the slash line was 156, 236, 224. Like that's as bad as it gets. He had the worst Bash in the organization at 64. Like I said, with 130 kind of being the peak, like that's the elite. You take it the other way, 30% below league average. If you're below 70, like that's really, really bad. So that was just a surprising change of pace where like I was kind of like higher on him coming into the year because I was like, oh, he outperformed his numbers. Like I thought he was better than what the traditional numbers said. And turns out that was not the case this year.
Well, I mean, his numbers, he didn't perform anyway, but then that's also where now he's 23 years old in high A ball. Like you do start to lose some stature at that point and guys are passing you up in the system and.
Yeah, and he wasn't taking walks like he had previously. He wasn't hitting for any type of power like I expected to break out with. So it was kind of a full 180 in terms of what we saw from Ethan Hearn.
Yeah. Are you planning any changes in the metric for next year?
No, I think that, well, yes and no. I don't think there's anywhere that I'm making small tweaks here and there. I will update every year in terms of run values and kind of utilizing FanGraphs for run values. I do that. So those will be like very minor tweaks. And then also with ballpark factors, I'll take into account, I use Baseball America's numbers for ballpark factors every year. And so just the more data I get as far as certain ballparks, the more that helps kind of refine the ballpark factors in this. That'll get a small tweak. I have several things that I would love to kind of incorporate or think about incorporating into Bash. Like I said, I'd like to go back in time and finish some of that work. I'd also like to, there's part of me, and I'm not sure how much I want to do this, but part of me thought about taking into account positional value in doing this. Obviously, like a hitter that is playing shortstop, an average hitter playing shortstop is better than an average hitter playing second base, you know what I mean, or third base. So taking into account positional value, I'm not sure how I would go about doing that. Two, I'm not sure how much I would weigh it. And three, I don't know how much I'd want to take away from the rest of the stat that's already there in presence.
That's true.
So that's something that like I might tinker with and keep separate and just do that to keep to myself and see how that works. I think that like that also, I mean, in addition to all of that I just mentioned, that adds a lot of work onto my plate in terms of tracking their position throughout the year. So I mean, because these guys kind of play all over, so that makes it a little more difficult. But overall, not much as far as changes go to Bash going into next year, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, it was fun to follow this year. I was happy to have it.
I appreciate it.
Fun resource. I guess as we head in the off season, like what would be your ideal state as from the prospect guy? Like some of these guys we really like are probably going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing as a prospect nerd, to kind of see these guys traded away because I've selfishly invested time into following these guys and tracking their careers and being able to kind of rank these guys and predict what they'll do in the major league level. And so I it's tough to see some of these trades happen where prospects are going away. But on the bright side, I'd say more than being a fan, I'm a fan of the Tennessee Smokies and the South Bend Cubs. I'm a fan of those teams. But more, way more than that, I'm just a fan of each of these individual players.
Mm-hmm.
Which is different than my fandom at the major league level, right? Like I have my favorite players at the major league level, but like I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, and so I want the major league team to do well. At the minor league level, I want these players to do well. So if they're traded away, if Kevin Alcantara is traded away, I'm gonna root my butt off for him to make the major leagues. I want him. For example, the Cubs traded away DJ Hurst.
Yeah.
This trade deadline for Jamer Candelario. He just got added today to the 40-man roster for the Washington Nationals. Love that.
Did
DJ
Made?
Hurst is a guy. What, say again?
Did Made get added?
Made did not get added.
Okay,
he did not. But Hurst did, which is like awesome. Because I talked with DJ quite a bit, had him on the podcast. Like he was just a great guy. So like I'm rooting so hard for him to succeed at the major league level. I'd love that. And so it's this weird like I'm happy if, when the Cubs acquire major league talent and trade away prospects. I'm happy for the Cubs to get better. I'm sad to lose this player I've been covering, but I'm also happy for the player because maybe they'll get a better opportunity to succeed at their new team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I'm rooting for this offseason is the lowest amount of pain in terms of my prospect fandom.
Yeah. Well, one thing I look at, like I look at it from the Cubs, Chicago Cubs perspective first. So I want a championship team if that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this prospect depth also has limited shelf life, right? Like you can't just keep Alexander Canario in AAA for the next 5 years. You're going to waste that value if he's not brought up or traded. So
yeah. And I think that last thing I'll say on that is that like I think that Alexander Canario is a good good conversation to have as far as like the comps to Nelson Velasquez, right? Very similar players in a lot of ways, but like I think that the Velasquez situation was really interesting because he just didn't have quite as much value based on the fact that he was having to be sent back down to AAA. He wasn't logging those at bats in the major league. I think he was better than the value he got back in the trade, with all due respect to Jose Kwas. And so that becomes super interesting in balancing that, like trading guys before they start to depreciate in value, but also not trading them before like they can potentially make an impact on your team. So I don't know. I don't get paid the big bucks for that. That's a Jed Hoyer story, and I get to critique him if he's doing it poorly because that's just how it works, right?
Hey, so I appreciate your time today. It's great having you on. I know you got a hard stop. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on the Cubs on Deck podcast. We post all over on any podcast platform where you listen to Cubs PS Plus. Also over on the Northside Bound YouTube page. You can check us out over there and see our beautiful faces. We'll be kind of posting some videos throughout. In addition to the podcast, I've been trying to upload some shorts over there. I've been working hard on that. We'll see if that continues. Maybe a few other video things here or there throughout the off season. That should be fun. You can find me on Twitter at Out of the Vines. You can find the show over on Instagram at Cubs on Deck. All that good stuff. You can find me on all the social medias. You can find me somehow. Just search Greg Huss, see what pops up.
Great. It's always great listening. It's great having you on.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining Greg and I today. If you like this episode, please drop a rating and a review wherever it is you get your podcasts, and share the episode with a friend. Just a few seconds from you gives me great feedback and helps other Cub fans find the show. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at Cubs PS Plus. And check out the Patreon page at cubspsplus.patreon.com to help support the show. As always, the theme music for this podcast is Prospect Park West by Jerry McCoy. This is Mike Waller, host of the Cubs PS Plus podcast. Every day with Cubs baseball or talking about Cubs baseball is a great day. Go Cubs!